Hi, I'm Reno Isto, and we're back on the Clay Pod, the podcast out of the Clay Place at Umpqua Valley Arts Association. And I'm back here today with Ted Isto, one of the instructors at the Clay Place. And today we're going to talk about water and some other things to do with hydrating your clay. But we're just going to start off talking about water. It's a basic element that has a lot of roles to play in the process of both clays and glazes. And so let's go ahead. Ted, what do people need to know about water? I mean, it's everywhere, right? The planet's covered with it. What's the big deal for ceramicists?
Well, a couple of things. If you've been reading your clay textbooks, ceramics textbooks, or if you've been paying attention to Clay Buddies or whatever source material, you've probably heard the fact that maybe you should be using distilled water in your glazes. So let's just talk about water. You know, it's 50% of what's in your clay bag along with the clay. So that's a pretty important 50%, especially if you realize a little bit more about the electrochemistry of small aluminous silicate particles, okay? And if you, again, were reading your textbook, your ceramics text, you know that everything that we're working with is, you know, for clay and glazes, is either some sort of aluminum, silica, or another kind of metal, right? If you look on your periodic chart, you'll find the metals, and we're using all kinds of them in glazes, a few of them in clays. And so metals have strange and unusual properties. They have a tendency, especially when combined with water, to do some unusual things. So we'll talk about a few of those things. Let's go back. I remember one of the first things I remember being told when I first started doing ceramics. Somebody said, if you need to patch a couple of dry clay pieces together that got broken or something, take a little vinegar and mix it up with some sort of dried up or powdered clay and use that as a patch material. And I thought, oh, great, it's going to glue it together. Okay, and you should always remember there is no such thing as glue, right? NASA has glue, but you don't have, and you can't afford it. So I thought, well, okay, so we got a glue here. And so I tried that. Didn't seem to work very well. I tried just mixing a little clay dust with water. That seemed to work about equally well. So I sort of thought of that business about vinegar as being a old wives' tale. But later, the school where I was taking ceramics classes, they had a pug mill. And so a couple of the graduate students said, you can have half of the clay that you run through the pug if you give us half. Okay? So I was recycling clay. The other thing that the smart graduate students said to me is, instead of putting it in a plastic bag, put it in a plastic 5-gallon bucket. And when you put it in the bucket, add some vinegar. Really? What's the vinegar for? It feeds the bacteria and it adjusts the pH, right? Vinegar is a mild acid, acetic acid, ascorbic acid. No, acetic acid, right? So anyway, I did that, trying to make the bacteria as happy as possible. And that seems to have worked. The other things that I've heard for vinegar, I wasn't so sure about. But so let's talk about a couple of other things that have to do with water and what you read in your ceramics text about distilled water. In the first place, what does distilled mean, right? Yeah, what does it mean? If you go to the grocery store and you're looking in the shelf where there's bottled water, you see distilled water and you see drinking water. And so I took a look there, and lo and behold, the distilled water was cheaper than the drinking water. So I'm trying to reason that out a bit. And so at first I thought, well, distillation, that would be steam distillation. That was my archaic way of thinking about how they might distill the water and sell it to you in a grocery store. But apparently that's probably not the case, because if they can distill the water, you know, in some way cheaper than they can just filter it, you know, so that you get it for drinking water. So what does distillation mean, right? Well, as far as I could tell, it means, you know, if it came by on a conveyor belt and I went woo, 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 woo as it went by, that would be distilling it to its essence of distilled water. So I don't think there's really any particular standard for what distillation process is. Undoubtedly, they remove some particulates and some mess with the electrochemistry a bit. But at school, we were having problems with some of the glazes that we had had for a long, long time as class glazes started settling in the buckets. What's called hard panning. And a hard panning in a glaze is when the glaze settles to the bottom between uses and you literally cannot stir it up, okay? And there's a couple of tricks to being able to reconstitute it, but they both take a lot of time and effort.
What are the things you can do to recover a glaze that's hard panned?
You can pour the water off it, and then you can sort of break up the, you know, what's left in the bottom of the container with a screwdriver or something and get it out in chunks. Put that in the water that you just, you know, removed from the top of the glaze, and by hand just sort of squish it back up, okay? And you're reconstituting the glaze with some water. That's a lot of effort, especially if you got glazes in 5-gallon buckets or something. And, you know, it'll settle right back down hard panned. Okay. Well, you know, the next day. So, you know, there are some mechanical ways, you know, if you've got an electric drill and a mixer, you can try working at it that way, but that's not very effective. Hard panned glazes, you know, really, really, really hard, okay, in the bottom of the bucket. So the other thing you can do is let the glaze dry out completely, which sometimes takes a long time. I had a glaze here a while back, took a year and a half to dry out in a 5-gallon bucket with just a couple of inches of hard glaze on the bottom. Took, like I said, about a year and a half to dry out. Once it's dried, you can crunch it up and add distilled water. Okay. So since we were having trouble at school with a couple of these class glazes that we'd use forever, and we seem to be having increasing problems with this hard panning, I thought a couple of things. We should do something. You know, I was hauling water from home because at a certain point I realized some of these glazes I had, you know, in my studio at home, and I use a little different materials than what might be at school. A lot of my materials are quite old, which wouldn't necessarily make them different.
But, a lot of your materials at home or at the college?
At home. So anyway, I noticed that the glazes I was having trouble with at school, I wasn't having trouble with at home. So obviously the water, you know, that I was using at home was different than the water at school. So I started hauling water to school, you know, in 1-gallon jugs, and lo and behold, we were able to fix the glazes with that, okay? And so that was rather interesting, and I didn't exactly know why that was happening. But the next thing I read is an article in the newspaper with an interview with a person who was a water treatment specialist at one of the, you know, I think it's Roberts Creek Water, where we were getting our water at school. And he's talking about these various things that they were adding to the water, right? So a couple of things, flocculants and deflocculants they were adding to the water. Flocculants tend to gather up particles and clump them together. Deflocculants tend to find particles and separate them out and settle them out, the heavy stuff. And so they're adding various small amounts of chemicals, if you want to call them chemicals, metallic salts in general, metallic carbonates, to the water to get the chunks of particulate matter to either clump together so that it's easier to separate it out, to run it through some kind of a filter, or to get the heavy stuff to settle, right? Which makes it easier to get rid of in the water system. And so they're, as a matter of course, adding this to your drinking water. I wouldn't become alarmed or worry about it unless you need more things to worry about. But indeed, it turns out, as far as I can determine, that small amounts of these things were affecting our glazes.
Right, because they were making stuff clump together and yes. settle to the bottom.
Yes.
As they should.
Yes, yes. And so, you know, I've since solved that problem just by bringing water from home. And instead of that, which got me hauling quite a bit of water around, we got a rain barrel. You know, the school, you know, bought us a rain barrel. And so we use rainwater for our glazes. Haven't had a problem since then. So that was pretty interesting. You may or may not have problems with that. Cone 6 glazes are not quite so prone to those problems. But cone 10 glazes, especially, which contain lots of clay and pretty finely ground materials, have tendencies towards hard panning. So that's worth thinking about your water. And it's easy to, you know, collect rainwater. You don't have to go to the grocery store and buy distilled water. So I'd think about that one. The other thing, while we're talking about water and sort of its effect on clay and glaze materials, back to the graduate students who said, you know, when I was packing away clay in a 5-gallon bucket, put some vinegar in there. Let's talk a little bit about vinegar. Since a lot of times I work with recycled clay out of a 5-gallon plastic bucket, take the lid off the bucket, dig a little clay out. I always used to squirt a little water on top, right? Keep it damp. And so, you know, a couple of days later or a week later, I'd take the lid off, still wet on top. What I noticed that instead of squirting water on top, if I squirted some vinegar on top, you know, after I got a little clay out, came back a couple of hours later and looked, the vinegar was gone. Really? It didn't evaporate, right? So what it did is somehow the electrochemical properties of the vinegar made the water into, I guess, you know, smaller molecules, I don't know.
So that it could be absorbed more quickly
yes.
in the clay.
So it would go through the clay. And since then, both at school and at home, we have water and vinegar and squirt bottles. You know, if you want to rehydrate some clay that's just getting a little on the dry side in the bag, squirt some vinegar in there and maybe let it set around for a day or two wrapped up. Squirt a little more vinegar in there. The vinegar will get into the clay when water won't. So that's kind of interesting about vinegar. The other thing that I was reading an article by a woman who worked mostly with porcelain clays, but she said that without any, you know, scientific evidence exactly to back her up, but sounding like a pretty intelligent person, that acid or acidifying your clay would make it more plastic. Okay? So she was experimenting. I think she was working on her master's degree. So she was experimenting with different kinds of mild acid in her clay. And the common kinds of acids that she could put in her clay were orange juice, right? Or some kind of citrus juice, which would be ascorbic acid, or vinegar, acetic acid, right? Because it's about, you know, a mild acid. And the other common acid would be sulfuric acid out of your car battery. But that stuff's dangerous. And
you don't want to put that into your clay and then go handling it.
No, you don't want to mess around with that. So that leaves you with orange juice and vinegar.
Or lemon juice, I suppose.
Yeah, right. And it turns out, you know, lemon juice, you got to or any kind of a citric juice, you've got to sieve the or filter the particulate matter out. And so, you know, it's easy and cheap to buy relatively clear vinegar, right? So that's worth thinking about. And sometimes that's a big help, especially if your clay gets a little dry in the bag. Squirt a little vinegar in there, put the bag tie back on it, let it set for a couple of days. So,
some ways it's kind of like, I wonder, we were talking earlier about this idea that the vinegar also helps something about the bacteria living in the clay and these things being stored for a long time. Do you think that really has much to do with it? Is there a kind of probiotics of clay, or is it really mostly just about water absorption?
Well, the bacteria do a couple of things in the clay that, you know, you can't see happening. But it turns out, since clay is a bunch of little platelets, right, aluminous silicate oxygen platelets, about 50 times as wide as they are thick, very, very, very thin platelets. And the platelets tend to stack up like decks of cards. The bacteria crawling around in your clay, and there are huge, I mean, I don't know what the numbers are really, but billions of them in your clay bag, okay? Billions, you know, that's like a national debt inside your clay bag and bacteria. But anyway, they're pretty active little creatures. And so if we could make them a little happier, that would be nice, right? And it turns out that when, you know, people with their electron microscopes are looking at this, the bacteria are able to get in between the little platelets of clay, crawl around in there. I guess they're not crawling. I don't know how they get around, really. But, you know, they're wandering around in between the little platelets of clay where water won't even get, because the little platelets of clay have a real electrical attachment to each other. But the bacteria can get in between there. The waste product of the bacteria is a gel, which is slick. So the bacteria are putting a slick lubricant between the little platelets of clay, which makes them slide more easily. And just the fact that they're crawling around in there, disturbing the sort of disorganized sort of collection of clay platelets, tends to get those clay platelets stacked up, right? Like decks of cards. So if you think about that for a minute, when you sort of take your thumb and slide your thumb along your clay, you're sort of fanning those cards, if you will. And the bacteria that's in your clay has made it easier to those things to end up in stacks. It's also made it easier for them to slide. So they've made the clay effectively more plastic. Hmm. Yeah.
So that's a good reason for thinking about, you know, using vinegar. But there's nothing about the bucket storage that necessarily relates to that, right? You can do the same thing in a bag. It's just that the bucket is a little bit more large scale effective way to store it.
Wrong.
What is it about the bucket form?
I don't know. When I first started doing this, you know, a long time ago, I tried, you know, just putting, you know, if I run, you know, a couple hundred pounds of clay out of the pug, putting it in plastic bags, you know, like it came. Well, it turns out it doesn't age very well on a plastic bag. I don't understand why that is. But if you put it in a 5-gallon bucket, it tends to age pretty well, okay? So age, what does that mean? That's like cheese or yogurt? Yes, a little. So it turns out, as far as my experience has told me, that clay tends to age better in a larger mass. And maybe the fact that a plastic bag is pretty well sealed up doesn't help its aging, but it's pretty well sealed up in a 5-gallon plastic bucket with a lid too. But I've, you know, worked with clays that, you know, especially native clays out of the ground, that were just horribly non-plastic when I put them in a plastic bucket and looked in there a year later, and they were beautiful clays, really plastic, really nice. So I didn't do anything to it from the outside of the plastic bucket. So bacteria inside the plastic bucket got things pretty well organized.
And when you talk about putting things in a plastic bucket, for people who haven't done this with clay before, you're not just talking about taking, you know, the circular cylindrical pieces of stuff that come out of the pug mill and just kind of dropping them in there. You're talking about packing them down into the bucket with a fair degree of tightness, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So that you're, you know, the bucket has some air in there, but mostly it's clay that you're kind of individually in layers, you know, pushing down with your knuckles or something like that as you pack it in there. So it is a kind of it's a much more airtight environment too than a plastic bag, where if you've got a couple rounds of clay out of the pug mill, they're got, you know, oxygen kind of all around them on all sides, you know, even if you seal up the bag, right?
Right. Yeah. There's a couple of materials that I talk to, you know, the people that make our clays, clay art, or used to be John at Laguna, they add some stuff called lignin to their clays to sort of artificially help the aging process. You can buy lignin. Lignin is what's inside the cell walls of, in general, trees, but actually there's lignin inside the cell walls of other kinds of cellulose, you know, plants. And the lignin, we used that for a while in our slop buckets, you know, put a half a cup or something of, you know, dry lignin in the slop buckets. I don't know, we could never really prove that it was doing us much good. It was cheap, you know, so it was made sense to experiment with it. And the clay manufacturers, you know, seemed to think that it was giving them a little bit of help. You know, in general, after they turn whatever clay body they're making out of the pug, they put it, you know, in plastic bags inside a clay box. They try and age that for at least a few months, you know, before they ship it to you. It's helpful. Clay art people date their, you know, when they produce their clays. That's sort of helpful. Laguna quit doing that, and I noticed Georgie's has never done that. It's pretty helpful to know when it was made.
So do you think, you were talking about slop buckets, do you bother with like putting vinegar in at the stage of the slop bucket, or is it really only after you've kind of pugged it that it matters, or is it worth tossing some vinegar into your slop bucket too to just kind of help the clay in there deconstitute a little bit more to get to the stage of...
Well, it certainly wouldn't hurt anything in your slop bucket. When you turn your clay out of your slop bucket into whatever you're going to dry it up before you put it in a 5-gallon can or 5-gallon bucket, that vinegar helps then. I usually put, you know, if I'm running 100 pounds through the pug, I'll put, a cup of vinegar in with that. Even if I'm putting it into plastic bags for students, it's cheap, you know, and it can't hurt anything. And for sure, it gives you a little help.
One thing that I thought to mention, because I think if people haven't worked before with, you know, sort of pugging clay and then storing it up, you know, in these ways that allow it to sit around for a while, and especially thinking about putting vinegar and stuff, is, you know, one thing that you're going to find, and you don't need to worry about it, but you're going to find when you dig back into your clay, it's going to have these dark blotches in it, right? Because you're going to get some, bacterial activity and stuff in there that you wouldn't find probably in a bag of clay that you just bought from some big clay manufacturer, but that's nothing to worry about, right?
Yeah, the darkening of the clay, sometimes you'll have, especially in porcelain clays, maybe if it's been sitting around for a long time in a bag, but it's been damp, there'll be some anaerobic, that means without air, decomposition. And so that'll show up as black, right, around the center of the porcelain clay. Sometimes it gets to smelling kind of bad. You can sort of get away from that a little bit by adding some vinegar. Makes it smell different and not so offensive. But there aren't any easy ways to kill that anaerobic decomposition. But
it's not harming the clay body as a, you know, it's not making it worse for working with or changing anything about how it's going to look when it's fired. It's just a decomposition process that's taking place because of whatever stuff in there is decomposing, right?
Yeah, organic material is decomposing. And people tend to not realize it, but if you do any sort of, scientific analysis of your clay, you know, as it comes out of the ground, in most places, it's going to be 20 to maybe 35% organic material, right? Pretty finely ground up, organic material. That goes away in a biscuit fire. Hopefully goes away in a biscuit fire. It's not surprising that you could get a little bit of decomposition in a clay bag.
A reminder that even stuff that we think about as being inorganic, really all of this stuff is bound up with processes of, you know, biological material. It's happening even, and in some ways especially, in your clays.
Right. Yeah. Right. The perfect media for it.
Right. Well, thanks so much for talking about water and vinegar, all of these things. Again, the big take-home message for those of you working with glazes, that if you start having problems with them hard panning or just settling out, think about what your water source is and think about the possibility of getting a rain barrel collecting water, something we should all probably be doing anyway. But just trying to get, you know, water from a source that doesn't have other kinds of stuff put into it can really help with glaze settling issues, potentially, and then also just thinking about ways to affect, you know, the chemistry of your clay, which is also affecting the biology of your clay, you know, shifting the environment for microorganisms that are inside your clay. Good thing to think about, good way to think about all of this stuff being connected, really at all the way from the microscopic to macroscopic levels.
If you really want to think about this some more, you might, scientists, you know, geologists have surmised that, you know, we tend to think of our clay as this dead material. But if you subject your, you know, if you took your stuff out of your clay bag and subjected it to what the atmosphere was like on the planet early in its formation, with volcanoes spewing out, you know, acidic fumes, and the oceans full of, you know, strange and unusual things, and warm seas. It turns out that your clay stuff, this aluminosilicates, will begin to form crude amino acids, right? Not lively stuff, not creatures, not evolving into creatures, but changing, right? So it's not exactly dead stuff, right? And so if you can just keep in mind that what's in your clay bag, you know, has some characteristics that you maybe hadn't thought of before, it'll, you know, make you feel a little more closer to what you're doing with your squishy stuff.
All right, Ted. Well, thanks so much. And catch us again on the next issue of the Clay Pod. Again, we're going to have these come out about once every other week, and we'll be talking to all kinds of different ceramics creators and educators from around the Umpqua Valley region about strategies that they have for working with clay, everything from real practical stuff to sort of philosophical approaches to the medium itself. So stay tuned for that.